What's the best time to start high school? And who gets to decide, individual school districts or the state? The American Association of Pediatrics and the CDC agree. American teenagers don't get enough sleep, with serious consequences. Lack of sleep is connected with behavior and learning problems, accidents, obesity, diabetes, and depression. There's a national movement to shift the start of the school day to a later time, at least 8:30, to better match the natural teen sleep cycle. School districts that have done so report benefits, including better attendance and fewer visits to the school nurse. A new bill before the Maine legislature would mandate a later start time for Maine high schools, but many school administrators, parents, and students oppose the bill, saying it wouldn't be workable. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, whether to mandate a later school start time. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There is little controversy over the fact that most teenagers have a hard time waking up in the morning, but there is plenty of disagreement about whether that means schools should move their start times later. Advocates say shifting start time to 8:30 or later can have a measurable benefit in how well students learn and function. Opponents cite problems such as coordinating bus schedules, especially in rural areas, and pushing sports too much later in the day. It's a complicated issue, and it's our topic for today's program. In the studio with me, Dick DeRost. He's executive director with the Maine Principals Association. Tracy Collins is a parent advocate with Start School Later of Southern Maine. And Robin Ostrander is director of child and adolescent psychiatry at Maine Medical Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you for or against having schools start later? Do you believe it should be mandated by the state? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Before we get to the guests in the studio, though, I want to start with State Representative Maddie Daughtry, who joins us from Augusta. Representative Daughtry introduced a bill that would mandate all of Maine's public high schools to start at 8:30 or later. Representative Daughtry, thanks for joining us, and tell us why you introduced this bill.
Well, this actually came from my own personal experiences. When I was in high school at Brunk High School, I had the hard time waking up in the morning. I felt like I didn't wake up until about two classes into the high school day. And I remember asking a lot of our teachers and administrators if this is something we could do. And they said because of bus schedules and expenses, it was out of the question. But it was so far that my senior high school goal actually said to catch up on 4 years of lost sleep. And you know, as I got older, I started following a lot of the late start movements and the growing body of medical evidence that shows that teenagers have a different sleep schedule, that really, you know, waking a teen up at 7 a.m. is akin to shaking an adult awake at 2 or 3 in the morning. And I decided I serve on the education committee here in Augusta, and I wanted to see if we could start having this conversation on a state level. And this is the second time we've had the bill. In the 127th Maine legislature, we had LD 711, which was a similarly drafted late start bill. And that was one of the most incredible experiences of my legislative career because the entire room was filled with middle schoolers and high school students who came to share their own experiences about why this was important for them.
What kind of reception have you had from your fellow legislators? Do you believe that the bill has a good chance of passing this session?
Well, it's interesting. It really does have a mixed reception, like I think anyone who's working on this issue nationwide has seen. We have a lot of passionate advocates for it here, and we also have a lot of folks who think this should be a local control issue and aren't necessarily interested in having this conversation at the state level. We have the work session this week, and I'm curious to see where it goes, but we have some big advocates for the bill on the Education Committee as well as in the legislature as a whole.
All right. Well, Representative Daughtry, thank you so much for joining us today. Maddie Daughtry represents Brunswick and introduced a bill that would mandate a later start time for Maine's public high schools. I'll turn now, Tracy, to you because you've been involved in this movement for a while now. You support the later start time and have been involved in making that happen in Saco and Biddeford. Tell me how that happened.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's so great to be here. About 2 years ago, my oldest child went to middle school, And it was an eye-opening experience for us as a family. We live in a small town. We walk to school. School started at 8:15, 8:30. And suddenly she had to get up at 11 years old at 5:40 to catch a 6:40 bus, and our school started at 7:20. And my late husband was a physician, and we felt that that was sort of not what the science had dictated, and trying to make a change became a real challenge because local control can sometimes be a myth when it comes to school calendars. We have a private high school in our town, and I had to convince them, and they said, well, we can't really do it until Biddeford, who's across the river, who has one of the 27 centers of technology excellence. They dictate the school calendar for all sending communities. So it turned into a multi-city effort and a lot of lobbying by local physicians. We're lucky that we have pediatricians of record that serve our schools, and so they were able to really help us advocate for the healthy science behind
it. And that's the case all over Maine, is that there is a tech high school that is tied with several other high schools in the region, some of which are a little bit of a distance away. What is now the start time for Biddeford and Saco high schools?
We switched from 7:45 at Thornton Academy to 8:30, and same thing for Biddeford. And our middle schools also now start at 8:30.
And has there been any measurable effect?
So I'm so glad you asked. We're only 6 months into our transformation, but we were the first school districts to actually comply with the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendation, sweeping recommendation from 2014. So we're the first schools in the state to actually start at 8:30. And one of the things that's been really interesting is that it's hard to measure a lot halfway through the school year academically, but we are seeing a reduced number of tardies and absenteeism. We have we're seeing a huge reduction in visits to the school nurse in the morning. We're seeing suspensions have decreased by 50%.
50%?
For 50%. And tardies are 35 to 40% decreased. And teachers are just saying that they're seeing a lot more awake participation in schools.
All right. I'm going to turn to you, Dick. Maine Principals Association, I'm guessing, opposes this bill because you're sitting here at the panel. Is that true?
We oppose one part of the bill. And that's the mandate piece. As a matter of fact, we encourage the conversation. We were part of one of the first informational meetings down in the Biddeford Saco area. There's a group of Mid-Coast schools that are having the conversation now, and I've had a couple of conversations with superintendents and principals in that area. Our opposition to the bill is centered around the mandate piece because we recognize that the four corners of Maine, or the eight corners of Maine, or how many corners you ever want to assign to it, are different. And it's a conversation that can take place a lot easier, in my opinion, in the greater Portland area than it can at Forest Hills High School in Jackman, who have no neighbors within a half an hour, let alone having 10 or 15 neighbors within a half hour.
But so might argue for a rural school, later start time is even more important because the kids have longer on the bus.
In some cases, that's true. But we've also pointed out that if you're a smaller school system, you probably are going to have to make some decisions around, will everybody start later? Do we have separate bus runs for the high school kids and the middle school kids and the elementary kids? And we're not saying that there are not things that can't be overcome. They can be overcome. But the way that Jackman or Lubeck or Van Buren is able to come to some kind of a way of having this work will be dramatically different, we believe, from Biddeford and Saco. So to mandate it, that's where we have the issue and the concern, because not everybody's going to do it the same way.
Maine Principals Association, among other things, oversees high school sports in Maine. This isn't about sports. This isn't about practice.
It's not, but to say that it doesn't flow over into it, I think, isn't being accurate either. There are parts of the state where you can start soccer games at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, or you can start them at 4 because your opponent is only traveling a half hour. Having been a principal at Presque Isle High School and knowing that other than two of our opponents, which were within an hour, everybody else was 3 hours away, there are some things that factor into that, and lost academic time becomes an important part of the afternoon discussion, so that kids aren't going to have to be released at 1 or 2 o'clock to be able to get to a soccer field that doesn't have lights. And we're not trying to say that athletic tail should wag the dog. It should not. But to say that we just simply exclude it from the conversation probably isn't accurate either.
All right. Well, Robin, the later start time idea is predicated on the idea that adolescent brains are wired to go to sleep later and get up later. Are teens really programmed that way, or can they just be encouraged to go to bed earlier?
Teens are programmed that way, and it is a very interesting phenomenon that anyone who has children will see unfold before them, I would imagine. And the issue is that they are simply not awake when they are awakened early, and they're not sleepy when you would like them to go to bed. So telling them to go to bed earlier doesn't actually work.
I have teenagers. I also remember trying to take calculus first period my senior year in high school, and I get what this is all about because I don't remember any of it. But what about age? Is this as much an issue for middle schoolers as it is for high schoolers?
It is to some degree in terms of the amount of sleep that are recommended for those ages. So the American Academy of Sleep Medicine has a consensus statement letting us know what the research is about how much sleep children need. And between the age of 6 and 12 years, kids need somewhere, and each kid is a little bit different, but they need somewhere between 9 and 12 hours. Once you get to age 13 up to 18, you need somewhere between 8 and 10 hours of sleep. It's estimated that as far as teenagers, only about 10% of them get 8 to 10 hours of sleep. Everyone else is sleep deprived. And I think that from what I've heard so far today, we're not hearing an argument that kids should sleep less. We're just trying to figure out what to do about it and how to make it happen. But certainly I'm happy to talk about some of the kind of side effects or deleterious effects of the fact that kids aren't sleeping enough right now.
Go ahead.
Well, there are multiple studies, both in terms of academic performance, emotional kind of variables, medical issues that are impacted by sleep deprivation in kids, adults as well. Most folks, what they call chronic sleep restriction. So if you're supposed to get 8 to 10 hours a night as a teenager and you chronically get less than that, have renal, cardiovascular, so effects on your kidneys, heart, digestive system, endocrine system. They're put at higher risk for what's called insulin resistance, obesity, and adult onset or type 2 diabetes. There's also numerous what they call at-risk behaviors. So teenagers tend to be a little bit less planful about their activities than adults, or more impulsive, shall we say. And there are actually risky behaviors such as suicidal ideation, substance use, that are related to sleep deprivation. In addition, the kind of attentiveness that's required for motor tasks. So with more sleep deprivation in teenagers, you get more sports-related injuries and more motor vehicle accidents.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to some of our Facebook posts. This has been really interesting. We posted an article last night on our Maine Calling Facebook page, and lots of people already commented. Here's Catherine. Go to bed at night and get up early to meet the challenge of the day. We're preparing these young adults to prosper in the real world. That is where you participate in the reality of life and have to make it to work on time. Thoughts about that, Tracy, that point of view?
So that is a common myth that comes up, or a common objection that comes up regarding just put them to bed in time. And I think what Robin was explaining is that there is this biological shift, a circuit and rhythm shift that shifts a half an hour, an hour and a half to 2 hours later than an adult or a child. So biologically, my daughter cannot fall asleep until 10:30 or 11. And the sleep does so many things for our body. It's all, you know, to relay your memories, and it restores things and repairs things. And if you wake them up for a 5:30 start time, they're not getting the actual whole experience of sleep, which then means that they've got this crunch on both sides. They can't fall asleep at night, and on the other side, they have to get up early, and it leads to long-term impacts. And so, yeah, great, it was great when I was a kid. We were the first generation. I'm in my 40s. We were the first generation to be going to school earlier. Busing was a big issue in suburbanization, and that's why school start times changed. People don't remember that most of the country started around 9 o'clock. And I think it's common for people to think that, you know, just put them to bed, but it's categorically across the United States and around the world. It's not just unique to us.
Dick, do you believe that with education, you said that the thing you oppose about the bill that's before the legislature now is the mandate. Do you believe that with education that most school districts in Maine will, within the next couple of years, come to a later school start time?
I'm going to back up a little bit to when Representative Daughtry was on and she talked about LD 711 from 2 years ago. From my perspective, I think that kind of started the conversation in a lot of areas of the state. And so that bill, even though defeated, served its purpose. I think we're doing the same thing with this bill. I think we're adding to the conversation. There are more and more communities around the state that are having this conversation. But as I said before, I think the key piece is each community has to decide that a majority of the people are willing to have that conversation. And then of the communities around you that all feed into a common CTE center, there has to be some cooperation of adjoining school systems to make this thing work. And I think we've begun the conversation. We're further ahead than we were 2 years ago. I just think, and our association thinks, we need to allow communities and those around them to have the conversation. I fully expect down the road that probably every 2 years or every year there's going to be more and more and more communities are going to make this change. But our issue is mandating it and telling everybody you've got 2 years to find a way to get this done when every region of the state, I think, is going to find a different way to get it done.
Tracy, are there any other districts other than yours that start at 8:30?
No, not at this time. There are several communities in southern Maine that are looking at this. And also, I probably should have said that Start School Later is a national nonprofit organization, grassroots organization. We have 90 chapters in 25 states. So this is not just new to Maine, but it's something that's going on everywhere. And there are 7 states right now that have legislation before different state legislators, because if you don't have a school board and a superintendent and leadership that's really willing to make the change, it doesn't happen. So that's part of the balance of the, you know, the carrot and stick kind of idea behind making a change.
And Tracy's absolutely right. I'm getting phone calls, pardon me, on a weekly basis from principals and sometimes from superintendents saying, how do we start the conversation? You know, what are the advantages and disadvantages? Is the MPA against it? No, we're not against it. We're against the mandate of it for everybody immediately. But I can tell you the conversations are taking place in different pockets around the state.
All right. And Robin, I want to ask you about go back to sleep for a little bit. Do naps help teenagers?
Not so much. I think that what might be interesting for people to hear is that there's actually research on what happens when you delay start times. So this has been done in enough countries and places in the U.S. that we have data to suggest what actually happens. I don't know if that would be helpful for folks to hear about. So there were several studies done, the 6 best, 3 of them were done in the U.S., 1 in China, 1 in Israel, and 1 in Norway. And they were described in a paper called a meta-analysis last year. And what they found was that if you delay start time, and these different studies delayed them from anywhere between 25 to 77 minutes of delayed start time. So we're looking at close to the 8:30 range. What you find is that the teenagers slept longer. However, and it was what we call a dose response curve. So every minute of delayed sleep time was an extra minute of sleep. There have been some that have argued that if you delay start time for school, that kids will just stay up later and sleep the same. That did not happen in the research. They spent essentially every minute sleeping. There were other effects as well that were found in the study. One was that the change in wake time on the weekends was mixed. It didn't really change much. There was some evidence that some children were doing less of what people call binge sleeping, so sleeping really, really late on the weekends to try to catch up. That may be an indicator that they didn't need to catch up quite so much. And there were several other outcomes, not just related to the minutes of sleep. So what they found was that they were not rating themselves as sleepy or being rated as sleepy in the morning by teachers. They had improved sleep quality, and then a bunch of emotional and kind of behavioral variables improved. So their behavior, their attention, their concentration was better. In some but not all schools, they found higher academic achievement. There was a significant reduction in tardiness. And, you know, when I think about trying to not get involved in this argument about who ought to do what, but just say, is it an imperative and how quickly should we move on this? One thing that really impressed me is that motor vehicle accidents are significantly reduced with this, so that their actual lives saved. Also, suicide, self-harm, drug use, other things like risky sexual behavior are all reduced because those are things that tend to happen in the after-school hours. And the after-school hours are now pushed later to a time when adults are more likely to be around. If high schoolers or middle schoolers are alone for a part of the morning when their parents have already left and their bus comes later, they don't get up and use drugs or alcohol or engage in unsafe behaviors. They simply sleep.
We do have to take our first break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can email us, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You never know when love might strike, but sometimes life guides you to the right place and the right time.
I just wanted to go. I just felt that I should go. Period.
I'm Patty White. Tune in to Maine Things Considered Monday to hear how one couple waited nearly a lifetime to find love. That's the next story in Maine Public Radio's series on aging, In This Life.
NPR One is a free app that plays back the latest newscasts and top stories from both NPR and Maine Public Radio. So no worries if you miss Morning Edition or All Things Considered or the Maine News Reports. NPR One also allows you to skip ahead to the next report if you'd like. And now, the latest NPR One update has an expanded local Maine section as well, with newscasts and news reports. NPR One, our mobile app for Apple, Android, and Windows phones that combines both NPR and Maine Public News, free and available in the Apple Store, the Android Play Store, or the Windows Phone App Store.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Starting School Later, Will It Help Teens Function Better? With me in the studio, Tracy Collins is with the Start School Later Organization of Southern Maine. Robin Ostrander is Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center, and Dick DeRost is Executive Director of the Maine Principals Association. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, Jeremy Ray, the superintendent of the Biddeford School Department. Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And so we've already talked about your district a little bit today. Tell me about the impact, as you see it, by changing the start time to 8:30.
Well, I think the change in start time for us at our middle school and high school first has gone really well in the transition. We have middle school students and high school students who are starting after 8:30 each day. They're not getting on buses until quarter of 8 to 8 o'clock. And the whole attitude and atmosphere of our schools has seen an impact on that. We've seen increased attendance, decreased tardiness, and just an overall really positive feeling about the change.
Have you heard from other superintendents who want to know sort of the logistics? How did you do it? And give us some advice.
Yeah, I've talked with several of the other superintendents who are considering or have made the change in their communities and, really wondering about less about the science, because I think the science is so extremely clear to everyone, but more about the mechanics of how you go through the process and do the work to inform the public.
Do the students like it?
When you talk to our students, if we said tomorrow we're going back to the old times, I suspect we'd have a lot of them at the next school committee meeting. They're just really they're happy with the change. I'm sure that there are some students who it may not work perfect for, but the overall population would not want to change back.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Jeremy Ray, the superintendent of Biddeford's School Department. And so we're going to move on to our calls from listeners. We're going to start in Farmington with Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hello. I guess my comment is to the State Principals Association. I really expect you to be a leader in promoting teen health and academic performance. I think it's a no-brainer. The data is clear. It's the right thing to do. But it won't be easy for many school districts to do alone, so it needs to be a mandate. And then I think your job, the State Principals Association, is to help school districts work out the logistics that work for them.
And I understand your perspective on that, Lisa. I would ask you to also keep in mind that as individual principals, we work for superintendents and school boards. So we can be part of the solution, part of working out the mechanics of how it's going to work at the local level. But still, the decision makers reside in central office and with the school board.
Lisa, thanks so much for your call. We have an email from TJ. Why is the elephant in the room, the plethora of electronic devices these kids have, not even part of the discussion? I have a 14-year-old grandson who's constantly sleep-deprived because he stays up, sometimes to midnight, with his smartphone. It's so bad that his mom said when he takes his gap year, he'll probably spend it in his room with his smartphone. His parents have put no limits on his access to his smartphone whatsoever. When my children were in their teens, they were allowed to read before sleep and have a light on to do that. But I can't even imagine that I'd have allowed them access to electronic devices with no boundaries on them whatsoever. Robin.
Well, we've had some discussions on the show in previous weeks about sleep, and I would agree with the opinion just promoted, which is that removing access to electronic devices and the internet during a specific time proposed for sleep is really essential for more than just sleep, also for kind of interactive complexity that occurs in the sometimes very negative social interactions among teenagers. So, for example, if you're supposed to be sleeping and you're on social media or the internet and someone breaks up with you or makes a public remark that humiliates you, you find out about it if the screen is in your room, and you don't find out till morning when your parents are awake if you don't have access. So it allows families to actually be able to notice when someone's having an extremely hard time. But backing up for sleep, there's a, you know, there are a great number of sleep hygiene recommendations, and removing screens, which also emit this flickering blue light, is definitely one of them.
And if I could just add to that as a parent, and this conversation is wonderful because it brings up all sorts of societal issues that we face. But I think as a parent, I would say you wouldn't put your kid in a car without teaching them how to drive and giving them a driver's license. We shouldn't be giving our kids devices without teaching them the limits and how to use them. And that's a policy in my house. But I think as a parent, when we try to make a school change and people come out and the first thing they do is blame the devices, I have to remind people it's a parent's job to set the bedtime, and it's a school's job to set the starting time. And it's a school's job to provide a safe and healthy place. It's my job to handle the logistics of how I'm going to get them there. And that's got to be a partnership that we do together.
We'll go to Steve, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I would just say that the Maine State Principals Association and does a great job, has for many, many years. And I think they've always tried to be on what a term so widely used, cutting edge. But I also think that right now in the state, if you want later starting times, the schools have done that. City Bangor, which I live near, that's probably the most prevalent one I know of. And also, it really isn't, you know, teens are going to make their own schedule, and sure, parents can tell you got to go to bed now because, you know, and let me grab all the devices. But I find, like, I live near Orono, there's kids up at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning to get to hockey practice. There's kids traveling from Aroostook County to go to sporting events in southern Maine or Massachusetts or New Brunswick or Quebec for hockey, basketball. I think so. I'm more on the let the district, who pay the taxes, who understand their kids, who love their kids, love their community, appreciate their schools. I think they can make a great choice and have been for many years. This wide, you know, just to paint the brush that everybody needs to do this, I think, number one, it won't work because you're going to force it. Number two, you know, I think that's what makes this a great state, the diversity of ideas, and maybe, you know, there's some other ways, maybe on the mod, you know, maybe have classes that start later so you can start later in the school day, because they're more like college, set up at like college times. But I think the forcing of it, we've seen what's happened with the school administrative, you know, consolidation and other things. Taxpayers want to say, and parents want to say in their own communities. And I think overall, Maine has done a great job. So I'm not sure I know the hearts are in the right place, but I don't agree.
Okay, Steve, thanks. I'm going to let Dick respond.
And Steve, you just stole part of my thunder, what my next response was going to be. I do agree with everything that's been said by my colleagues here today. The science says this is the way we need to go. But I've been in Augusta for 17 years now, and I find that almost every mandate that comes down, there's pushback from the mandate. But if you encourage people and give them the information to start the conversation, that's when things get done.
We have an email from David. Hello. If the state mandates a school start time, can they include a provision requiring employers allowing parents a later work time? And if so, how do we prevent discrimination at work against parents? And how do businesses manage this change? What has been the experience where you live?
There's never been anybody who's been fired for a start time change. I think, you know, we as parents juggle a lot. I have 3 kids, 11, 13, and 8. My schedule is changing daily, if not seasonally, with different sports, and we adapt. Transportation studies that showed that the last one said that 4% of the population in the United States might be affected if there were changes nationwide to start times. And I think we found that, you know, you work it out. It hasn't really been a big impact. Until the school day is the same amount of time as the work day, you're always going to have challenges and struggles about coordinating those logistics.
Yeah, I think Tracy's right, if I may. I think that people may have to look at things differently in terms of where that child care comes from, either in the morning or the afternoon. But it's one of those things that creatively, I think, can be worked out in most situations.
Okay, we're going to go to Scott calling from South Portland. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Tracy made earlier about the fact that nationally we used to have much later start times. And I just learned about this just very recently, and was just curious about hearing more about, you know, what kind of precipitated the change nationally to such early start times. But I think people understood that it wasn't always this way, that maybe that kind of helps, helps make the argument that you can go back to something more similar.
So, Tracy, what decade was it where we switched from later start time to earlier? And you said it was because of suburbanization, when we had more and more kids taking school buses and fewer kids walking to school?
That's true. There was a City Lab just put out a survey or a story last week. When suburban areas started to sprawl and you had longer distances to bring kids to and from a school district, there were decisions made about busing tiers, because it was less expensive. Instead of having a bus for every school and going in at the same time, you could do 2 bus runs. So you could send your, and without any scientific basis at all, school districts chose to start the high schools so much earlier because you didn't want an elementary school kid standing out in a dark corner at 6:10 is when our earliest buses rolled out in Biddeford. So that's the reasoning behind it. And now we know 30, 40 years later so much more about the human brain. You don't want to put anybody out there before 7 a.m. in the dark.
You don't want to put anyone out, but the little kids are the ones more likely to be up and at them at 6 o'clock in the morning, aren't they, Robin?
Yeah, and in many school districts, including the one where my son is, he is up a long time before his bus arrives at around 8:15.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thanks so much for your call. And that is going to be our last call in this section of the show. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Nellie Mae Education Foundation, supporting the Maine Education Project, and Raise Your Voice on MainePublic.org.
You never know when love might strike, but sometimes life guides you to the right place and the right time.
I just wanted to go. I just felt that I should go. Period.
I'm Patty White. Tune in to Main Things Considered Monday to hear how one couple waited nearly a lifetime to find love. That's the next story in Maine Public Radio's series on aging, In This Life.
And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have World Affairs. Former Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd will discuss the future of the Asia-Pacific region and how the continent can continue to rise in an age of uncertainty with issues such as climate change, growing nationalism, and the militancy of North Korea. That's World Affairs with Prime Minister Kevin Rudd coming up at 2 o'clock right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the pros and cons of starting school later. Joining me today, Robin Ostrander, who is Director of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Maine Medical Center, Dick DeRost, Executive Director of the Maine Principals Association, and Tracy Collins with Start School Later of Southern Maine. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. 3566. Tracy, in the Biddeford-Saco area, when the discussion was going on and the decision was made to move the school start time for high school students up to 8:30, was there resistance, and how did the district overcome that resistance?
I have to sort of give credit to Jeremy Ray. He didn't get to really explain a lot about what he had to do to overcome, but one of the things he did really well was manage the fear, because change of any kind is always something, as humans, we react in a fearful way. It's going to change my schedule. The sky is falling. One of the things that he made sure he did, we put school physicians in front of everybody, and it started with the science, because when you start with the science, you start with a fact base. But he also really heard parents. Biddeford and Saco are different communities. Biddeford has a high free and reduced lunch population, and there were lots of families that were really concerned about childcare. Bumping up, moving, we did a flip, so our elementary school started about 30, 40 minutes in some areas and 10 minutes in most areas earlier. And that meant that some of the pre-care costs were eliminated, but there were some families that were really worried that their high schoolers were the ones that were picking up after school, those younger kids. So he sort of did a survey and figured out what that cost would be, and it was about 8% of our population, and they worked out a way to give a really great rate with our parks and rec departments, where they run after-school programs in schools anyway. And it was a $4 a day opportunity for those families. So I think it's about understanding what the issues are. The other thing that was interesting was athletics. Jeremy took a look at the existing schedule that they had in Biddeford and said, okay, if we shift our start time and we end 45 minutes later, what does that do to this year's athletic schedule? And we found that less than 1% of our athletic games were impacted. And in those instances, a lot of them were fall soccer or things that were sort of smaller sports that were further afield. One of the things he instructed them to do for the coming year was let's schedule our further afield games that are going to be later in October. Let's schedule those earlier, and we'll do some of our closer games under the lights or something that we can do when we're together and not so far to travel. So there are creative ways. You just have to be willing to look at it.
All right. Deb on Facebook wrote, my daughter is a freshman in college. Her first class starts at 10:30 a.m. She says she didn't realize how unhappy she was in high school until she got to college and was able to follow her natural sleep patterns. She reports being much happier simply because she's getting enough sleep. Robin, how long does this shift that happens in high school last? How long do we stay night owls that want to stay up past midnight and get up late in the morning?
Well, there are some who continue to be night owls, and others will start to shift to an earlier rhythm as they get towards adulthood. You know, it's hard to say with any kind of statistics, but we do know very much that it is hard to find early birds in high school. They are almost all night owls, whether they'd like to be or not.
And what about in college?
College is a little bit of a mixed bag, and people start to blend. Obviously, there are multi-age learners in college, but the youngest students are the ones who tend to avoid the 8 and 9 a.m. classes. So they're able, with selection, to find a way that works for them. Unfortunately, that's not usually available in high school, although I have seen some schools with some ability to do things like schedule study halls the first 2 hours of the day, where students just put their heads down and sleep. The issue is that they're not really doing what study halls are meant to do and not finishing the work they might do if study halls were later in the day.
We're going to go to Damariscotta and Mal. Hi, Mal. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been a school bus driver for 13 years up in the Damariscotta area. I drive high school kids up to Lincoln Academy. And I just have an observation that starting out an hour later would help the drivers, school bus drivers, due to just an observation about the Maine weather. Many times starting an hour later results in a much better driving conditions and not starting out in the dark so much. So I think there's a safety factor there that should be considered. I'm not sure that making it mandatory, though, would be the way to go. I think that each town should be able to decide on its own. Also, my other observation is the kids on my bus in the morning are barely awake. I mean, it's a quiet ride first thing in the morning compared to the afternoon.
Mal, thanks so much for adding your perspective. And I have to say, you know, that is true. How often does a school district have a late start day when there's a storm? We're going to delay the start of school. So it's something that, you know, obviously is something that school districts realize, especially when there's some inclement weather in the winter. Thanks for your call. Go ahead, Dick.
One of the things I've been thinking about, too, is that there are some areas of the state that are covered by multiple CTEs. I'm going to use the example, I believe.
I'm going to stop you right now. CTE is
technical centers.
Right.
In the greater Portland area, there's Westbrook, Biddeford, and Portland, and I think there's some opportunity for kids to go to any one of those three depending upon the program that's being offered. Same thing is true in Aroostook County with Presque Isle and Caribou. So it means in some parts of the state you have to have more communities being willing to sit down and have that conversation because you can't start CTE classes at one of those centers at 9 o'clock for a group of kids and then at 9:30 for another group of kids and expect some of the classes to blend together. It can be overcome, but it takes more people talking together.
We're going to go to Steve, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Steve. I'm a pediatrician up in the Mid-Coast area, and I'm former president of the Maine chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. And I just wanted to make a comment regarding the issue and also the mandate. This is one of these instances where I think there is now a preponderance of data and science, and all of the guests seem to agree that this is healthier. And similar to things like cigarettes and even tanning, at some point, I think it is appropriate for this to be mandated. And this issue has been brought up in, you know, before the legislature before. And so if we, and there's only so far one district that's sort of following along with it. And so I don't know how many years or how long or you know, how much tardiness or suicide that we need to tolerate, you know, to eventually mandate this. So perhaps something like a soft mandate, a 5 to 7 year introduction, or something more along those lines that would give districts a chance to get aligned. But there's general agreement that this is a good thing, which is nice. So I think it's one of those things that probably is due for a mandate.
Tracy, you're nodding.
Thank you, Steve, for your endorsement. I think, you know, when we stood up in front of our school board and said the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Medical Association, the American Society of School Nurses, the National Education Association, there are 41 health and education associations that have taken a policy decision on this. So which of the CDC recommendations do you not want us to follow? You know, it's only a matter of time. We have last week, the National Transportation Society issued a report that talked about deaths and traffic violations and fatalities on the road. 16 to 24-year-old drivers are the most at-risk drivers. And if you put a drowsy teen behind the wheel of a car, that's the equivalent of an adult getting behind the wheel of a car after 3 to 4 beers. That's really significant. So I think, you know, it's a discussion that needs to happen, and if we don't follow the rules, then it's just prolonging the inevitable consequences.
Steve, thanks for calling in today. We're going to go to Sacco and Tom. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I just wanted to call in. I am the assistant principal at Sacco Middle School.
Oh, great.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, so it seems like a lot of data has already been presented about the benefits of starting school later, but I'm not sure if anyone has spoken to just the overall attitude and looks on the students now that they have an hour of extra sleep. So last year I was a teacher at Saco Middle School, and now as the assistant principal, just the attitude and the way that kids look when they walk into the school is so much better just because they get that extra hour.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Tom, for calling and joining the conversation and adding that perspective. We have an email from Kate in Hope. Our district is considering a later start time for Camden Hills Regional High School next year. If this plan goes forward, it will mean that the elementary school will start 1/2 hour earlier to facilitate busing. Does anyone have any feedback or science about how this affects the younger students?
Well, one thing I would mention is that there may be some easier fixes for that in terms of morning care. There are some school districts that already offer activity-based things to do in the morning for younger students. So given that exercise is another issue that we talk about in education, I would certainly support looking at activities that can happen early in the morning before school at school. For those kids who are riding the bus.
Right. Well, I'm thinking that what she's saying is that Camden Hills is thinking of switching its bus schedule. And instead of taking the elementary school, the high school kids first, and the elementary school kids second, the same school bus is switching that and taking the elementary school kids first and the high school kids second. So.
Right. Yes.
So if younger children are picked up, let's say they're picked up at 7 o'clock now or picked up 7:15 now and picked up at 6:45, is that going to be a problem?
Well, you know, there may be individual parents who would report on what their children are like, but certainly in terms of the circadian rhythms and the natural daily rhythms, it would be generally fine for younger children to get up earlier and start school earlier.
Sean on Facebook asks, if mandating the change is not workable for some rural schools, what incentives could the state provide to encourage this change where it's less of a problem?
That's a great question, and if we had the answer to that, we probably would be down that road already. I think that in each case, there's going to have to be those local conversations, and as I said before, there's uniqueness in each corner of the state, and I think for anybody to tell them how they're going to solve it may work against having it be successful at the local level.
We're going to go to Eli, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Eli. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add a real-life anecdote in support of the later school times. I'm a graduate of the Maine high school system. I graduated high school in 1995. And I was in high school during the changeover into 80-minute periods from 40-minute periods. And I can tell you that having more time is always better for high school students. I think having more time to be able to focus is important for kids at that age. I know that my academics improved greatly after that changeover in our high schools, which was mandated. Another personal anecdote, someone else brought this up just a couple minutes ago, is we basically did our best to have later school times ourselves by arranging all of our study halls in the first half of the day with our classes. So we could come in, check in, but then we were free for the next, you know, one or two 80-minute periods to rest. We had open campus so we could actually leave. And then as long as we were back in time for our other classes. And I would go out in my car and take a nap for an hour and a half, you know, and then come back.
Dick is smiling. How do you want to respond, Dick?
Eli, I'm going to have to disagree with you slightly. I've been around a little bit longer than the 1990s. Block scheduling was not mandated. And I think part of the reason that it worked in as many places as it did was that it became a local conversation. And the decision was made that for that school, that community, that was the direction they were going to go. But block scheduling was not mandated.
Eli, I appreciate your call. I'm going to go to a Facebook post here. This is from Mandy. She writes, my 12-year-old's school bus picks her up at 6 a.m. Not many adults leave for work that early. She gets home at 3, has 1 to 2 hours of homework some nights. Their band and chorus concerts start at 7, end at 9. Our kids are kids. Not many adults are robots to be programmed and overscheduled. Scientific data and human development support teens having the later start for biological reasons, and the later release leaves less time to get in trouble before parents are home. Win-win. Is that usual, Dick, a 6 a.m. school bus stop?
There are areas of the state when that does occur, yes. And there are I think I heard the case the other day that there's a school district where within every week there's the equivalent of driving a bus from Maine to California and back when you put all the bus runs together and the distances that kids have to travel. But again, I think that's the reason why different places are going to have to look at this differently, because there are places where you will have kids on a bus for up to an hour and there's almost no way to avoid it.
Robin, if her 12-year-old is getting on the bus at 6 o'clock, possibly getting up at 5 or maybe 5:30 if that kid is really organized in the morning. That's really early.
It is. They're it may be for, you know, someone in kindergarten, they might be interested in getting up that early, but that's about it. I think the question of do we ask adults to have this kind of rigorous schedule, and generally we don't, is really important. And a 6 a.m. bus is just too early for everyone.
One of the questions was asked earlier, are there some things that could be done? I think one of the reasons why some of those bus trips are so long is that they're trying to limit the cost of transportation. And in order to keep those costs down, a bus may have to go a 50 or 60 or 70 mile circle to go all around the district and pick up kids and come back. If there were more funds for transportation, for busing, it may allow for another bus or two in some of those smaller districts and allow for quicker, more efficient pickups.
Yeah. Well, thank you all. What an interesting conversation. And thank you for bringing it here to our studio. Dick DeRoss, the executive director of the Maine Principals Association. Tracy Collins is a parent advocate with the organization Start School Later of Southern Maine. And Robin Ostrander is the director of child and adolescent psychiatry for Maine Medical Center. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about social media. We'll hear from experts on best practices, whether it's for your home or small business. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.